Hi, this is Michael Topp of PardonFindSeminars.com. This is the beginning of the Art Hamill Teleseminar, Part 5. This section of questions has to do with the subcategory of negotiating the deal. Art, what leverage do I have or can create to lower the asking price?
Well, you know, I always go back to one thing. When you're going out to lower the asking price or get owner financing or whatever, it really has to do with getting to know the other party. I mean, everybody tries to make this pretty complicated. We can negotiate with the seller, or even when I'm working with a buyer, I'm the seller. Once you get in there and they find out that you're real and that you can provide the money to buy this, which you will be able to do in the first hour, and I don't care if you have brokers there, you have merger and acquisition people there, they don't leave. You don't need a lot of negotiation techniques. The technique here, get to know the other party. And what's going to happen is, whether you're trying to lower the price or whether you're trying to get owner financing, they're not going to get it until I get to know you. Because once you walk in, they don't know you from out. And so what happens is they have a tendency not to trust you. They don't believe in you. Once you're there 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, and you start to talk about lowering the price or coming up with some other condition or getting owner financing, there's more chance they're going to say yes. And you can try every technique in the book. And all I can tell you is the one that works consistently is getting to know the other party. Once you're in there 4 or 5 hours, the two of you are going to know each other very well. Again, although a lot of people over the years that come back to me and say, oh, that's crazy, that'll never work. Yes, it does. Because every time I have something there to do, a person's telling me, oh, this will never work, blah, blah, blah. I said, go out and try it. And then come back and complain to me if it doesn't work. How many people have come back? None. Why? Because it works every time. I don't care what country you're in or who you're doing business with. What'll happen is, even if you're the most obnoxious buyer in the world, and even if the seller is the most obnoxious seller in the world, I hate to tell you this, but after 4 or 5 hours, you'll become buddies. Human beings have a hard time hating each other once they get to know each other.
That's great. What issues should I be aware of if I'm buying from multiple partners?
Well, when you deal with multiple partners, I don't care if it's a husband or wife or whatever, you have to try to get all the interested parties into every meeting you have, because what's going to happen is you're going to get down to the end and you're going to think you have a deal. And the guy's going to tell his wife doesn't agree. Or, especially if it's a partner. I have two partners that are out of the business and they just invested. But you're going to get down to the end and you're going to find that you don't have a deal. I mean, I still remember one of the big deals I had in Mexico. I had been working with two owners for years. I mean, a long time. On a deal we had, because we had brought contracts in. We then went to the point where we made an offer to buy the company. Full offer, full price, all cash. They turned it down because their third partner turned it down. I had never heard of this person. I didn't know there was one. And to get the biggest shot down, yes. Did I not do a good job or do my homework? I mean, I've been there a few years. You think it would have come up in that period, but it didn't, and I wasn't able to put it together.
How does one buy a majority or controlling stake if the owner does not want to sell the entire business?
Okay, here's what's going to happen. When you're out trying to buy a business, some owners are going to want to put you in a minority position. When you go out there, the thing you have to realize, I don't care if you're in a 30, 40% position, if you own 30, 40% of the stock or 49% of the stock, you're going to find that the other person with a 51% is not going to pull rank on you and cause that problem. I mean, I've been in business now for 53 years, and we've been involved with thousands of companies, and we have never had that come up as a problem. Again, in the beginning, I used to be notorious. I mean, in my brain, thinking, oh my God, I have to have control. I mean, my gosh, it's going to be terrible. How many times has it ever come up? How many times has it been a problem? Never. It has not come up. It's one of those things that everybody worries about when they go into the business.
How can you buy a business by exchanging your marketing knowledge?
When you're buying a business and you're exchanging marketing knowledge, you're going to have a hard time with the owner. Now, if you're coming in and you're going to offer your marketing knowledge and you're going to do that for part ownership in the business, that's one thing. But to completely come in and buy a business, it's like saying, in real estate, are we talking about nothing down? Well, in all years I've been in business, I have never seen a deal where it's nothing down. We have deals where we finance 100%, but not nothing down, because the seller always wants something down. And I could imagine what the average seller would do if you come in and you're offering your knowledge to buy that company. I couldn't imagine a seller buying that. Now, if you're going to come in a minority position and you're going to be working for the company or providing consulting work for part of the company, I could see that happening. But to come in to buy a complete company, and I'm talking about a company making money, not something in trouble, something you're going to turn around, but a normal company. You ought to try it, but don't be surprised if it doesn't work.
Mark, what one skill, if I developed and did it in an excellent fashion, would have the most impact on my success at buying a business?
Well, the one skill you need is to become very negative. In other words, if you think everything is cherry in the world and everything is fantastic, you're going to get shafted when you buy a company. What you have to do is put your mindset. You're going to give the owner a big hug every time he tells you something. But what you're going to do is you're going to check everything in detail as if you didn't believe a word he was saying. You don't tell him that, and you don't put him down with that, but you still have to go through everything, dot every I and cross every T. The reason for that is there's a lot of things owners are going to hold back. Some intentional, some not intentional. What's going to happen is it's going to come back and bite you when you get into that business. Or if nothing else, even if it's not a major thing, it's going to irritate you and get your stomach all upset because you missed something. So take your time, check everything out, and then double check it and triple check it. I know a lot of people that go out there and just wing it. Don't even bother checking anything. They say they're doing due diligence. These are people I'm working with. And when I get in there to do my due diligence behind them, because I'm bringing investors in, they haven't done a thing.
Mr. Hamill, how to persuade a big company to buy 50% of an old company? I would buy the other half and then use some of the marketing resources from the partner company.
Okay. If you're going well, and let's say you want to buy a company, and your deal is going to be, you'll put up half the money, you're going to put your experience up for half the company, and you're going to get a big company to buy it. I can't see them doing it in that order. In other words, if you went out and bought a company and built the thing up and then went to a large company and sold them half of it, that happens quite often. Or sell them all of it, exchange them for stock. But what you're talking about is, again, you're complicating the process. In other words, it is possible for every one of you to go out and buy a business without going through these convoluted things that you come up with. Again, you might read about it in a magazine somewhere, but it's not the way things are normally done. I just keep trying to tell people to go back to the simple life, go back to the simple ways of buying these companies, instead of coming up with all these, I'd say, harebrained schemes, but I don't know where you get them from. All I'm saying is, go back to the basics. They work all the time. These other things are things that may work occasionally. I wouldn't even consider doing them. I think you're wasting your time trying to do things like this.
All right, what is the most important thing about buying a business that you are wish you had known but didn't when you bought your first business?
Oh, my gosh. I can think of at least hundreds of things that I have done. How I survived in a business, how to be pure luck. Because do I know anything about due diligence? No. If I sat down and gave you a list of the top 50 things I could do, well, off the top of my head, I can do this. I mean, at my age, I may forget a lot of things, but those things I don't forget. You, as a person buying a company, I want to tell you something. If you go out and commit as many mistakes as I do, and you're not lucky, you're going to fail. So in the beginning, I was very lucky. I had nobody to go to. There's nobody to talk to. There weren't programs out there when I was doing this. I mean, this is 50 years ago. I hate to tell you how different things were 50 years ago, but they were. And there was nowhere to go. I mean, I looked around. I had all these crazy ideas. It's like, well, if you do, this is how you buy a business. Of course, I thought you had to start one to show you how stupid I was when I got out of college. My goal was to be a millionaire. And you know how I thought I'd get there? I was going to go to work for IBM and eventually work for IBM and become a millionaire. It didn't dawn on me until later that the people that became millionaires were not employees of other companies.
Art, how do you convince doubting owners to deal with you when you approach them directly? For example, not through an accountant or a lawyer.
Successful people I've worked with over the years have not gone through an attorney or a CPA, even through a business broker. They basically have sent letters out or other correspondence directly to sellers telling them they're interested in buying their company. So basically, what you do is you get a call back, and the seller said, I saw your letter that you sent me, and I'd like to talk to you. I never thought about selling the company, but if you'd like to talk about it, we can do that. And so they're going to be nice, because they're looking at you as a person with money, a person that's going to buy their company. You're going to find they're very friendly. In fact, over the years I've been doing this, especially in manufacturing, I have never met a owner that owned a manufacturing business that wasn't friendly, that wasn't nice, that wasn't an engineering type, a laid-back person. So what you're going to find is you have to get over the fear. What you have to do is realize you go out and you just get started. Everybody worries about the fact that the owner's going to give them a hard time, the seller's going to be horrible to work with. And what you have to do is you go out and find out what the real world is. And even though you have all these doubts and dreads about this, everybody does this. Everybody has the same feeling. I can tell you I've had that more times than anybody that's listening to this right now. When I got started, I was afraid of everything. And all I can tell you is what you have to do is go out and go to that meeting. Sit down with the seller, and what you're going to find is all the things you've heard disappear. What will happen is after your first or second meeting, you're going to be the coolest person in town. How do I know? I've been doing this a long time, over and over again.
If the SBA is only lending money on businesses that are growing or level in revenues, what's the best way to sell the owner on seller financing?
First of all, most of the businesses we work on don't really qualify under SBA. And although I worked with SBA companies a lot when we were getting involved 40 years ago and worked directly with the people from Washington, D.C., the problem we had at the time is they were very tough to work with. And what they would do, even then, they would want you to put up all the assets you had, your collateral, your aunt, Mamie's, wardrobe, whatever it happened to be. And today the problem is, again, looking at the SBA, just taking that as a standpoint, as of it was March 1st, which is a month ago of this year, the SBA has set the thing up so that sellers of companies had to carry back financing of 10 or 20%. You have experience in that industry. So they've made it a lot tougher. What happens is the SBA talks a good game, or the government talks a good game, but they usually do not perform in most areas, so don't be surprised. The other thing is the SBA really goes up to about $2 million, so if you're interested in something larger than that, you have to get the SBA out of your mind. Now, keep in mind, until recently, when I've gotten involved with some business brokers, I had not thought of the SBA. It hadn't even crossed my mind in the last 30 years. If we had not worked with the SBA or even heard about them, I guess they existed, but we just didn't work with the SBA on anything like that. Now, as far as getting owner financing, it always goes back to the same thing. You can't call them on the phone and ask for owner financing. Owner financing, I keep telling people, we have one way of doing it, and it works almost every time, and that is, you don't discuss it in the first hour, you wait till the second or third hour. As soon as you have a feeling that the two of you are bonding and that you're becoming friendly, and basically the seller appears to be trusting you, feeling good about you the way he's talking or she's talking, at that time you bring up owner financing. Before that, the owner doesn't know you, and even if the owner had told the broker, the merger and acquisition people, that they would provide owner financing, they don't believe it. Now, if you don't believe that, the next time you go out and the broker tells you that the owner will finance, the first thing you do is ask you about owner financing in the first hour, and then say, do you really want to finance or do you want all cash? And every one of them, hello? Every one of them will say they'd rather have all cash. Nobody wants to finance the business because every owner of every business, when they sell, worry about the fact that they're going to have to take their business back if you screw it up as a buyer. Now, why do they feel that way? Because a lot of people that provide financing in the business end up having to carry the business back because the buyer screws it up. It happens quite often. Because it happens quite often, many sellers worry about this. In fact, I don't know any sellers that don't worry about this. So the word is out, and what you have to do is get around the word.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Art, is there one specific question you ask to start the ball rolling that gets the seller's attention to make him or her stand up and take you seriously?
Well, I start off by telling them who I am. Again, I don't care who you are or what your background is. The thing that's going to get the ball rolling is to let them know who you are, what your background is, and just be honest with them. Because what happens is we as human beings have a tendency to telegraph it when we're not telling the truth. And again, the seller hasn't met you before. The seller doesn't feel good about you because he doesn't know you. And so what you have to do is sit there and tell the truth and tell who you are and be nice about it. And like you normally are, you don't have to play any games or anything. And that'll get the ball rolling. And then you have to go to these questions, like you tell you. You have to ask these questions that don't have yes, no answers. Just don't ask them something. Have you been in business long? Yes. Do you like it? No. What you ask them is, tell me something about how you got started a business. It's always a question that has to do with explain it in detail. And again, at the end of X number of hours, the thing everybody always finds, you're going to find that this seller and you, the buyer, are going to be getting along famously. You're also going to find that as you ask for things, are they asking something in reverse? You're going to say yes. Why do you say yes? You know each other now. Again, you say, how can you know each other 4 or 5 hours? Well, you know each other a lot better than you did 4 or 5 hours ago. And all I can tell you is, this is what we've come up with 4 or 5 hours after all years. I've had people go 7 or 8 hours in the first meeting. 4 or 5 hours is what normally works. And again, you can go to all these classes and maybe they're going to teach you how to negotiate. When I speak seminars, I used to make everybody nervous because I wouldn't cover negotiating until I got down to the last part of the class. And I would tell them, just spend 4 or 5 hours, and they would sit there, stunned. And they're like, huh? You got to be kidding. This can't be that easy. He said, well, go out and try it. I know you think you have to be a Henry Kissinger to negotiate. And those of you that are older, you probably don't know who he is. He's a predecessor of Hillary, but by 20 or 30 years.
People who are buying their first business will generally be working a full-time job and using their spare time to work on the business purchase. Should this be something that we shy away from telling the seller so that they will take us more seriously?
If you're referring to the fact that you have a job, there's no reason to lie to the sellers when you're going in there. The other thing is a lot of people worry about being able to set up a meeting. The average person that's selling a business really wants to meet you after hours anyway because they're always nervous about the employees or the customers finding out that the business is for sale because it'll screw up the value. So what they're doing is they're going to say to you, why don't you come in? The employees will all be going by 7 o'clock. Why don't you come in at 7 o'clock at night? Or the second thing they'll say, why don't we meet at a restaurant somewhere? I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to make you very nervous as a buyer because they don't even want you in the company at all. I mean, I ran into that in Southern California about 10 years ago. And we had to pull apart the deal because we were in escrow. We were going through the due diligence period. And they wouldn't let us have access to the facility. You know what happens? If you can't get in there while the employees are there, you can't find out really what's going on. But in the beginning, you don't have that problem because the seller's going to want to meet you someplace else. They're not going to want to meet you during any working hours because they don't want the employees and stuff to find out. Well, but you have to do, you know, when you're mailing or sending out anything, you have to think about it from the standpoint of the person you're sending this to.
I'm just curious. So you know that's a big concern. Have you found that to be across the board? Almost all owners are very concerned about their employees knowing that they're even considering selling the business?
I'd say 99.999%.
If they're concerned about that, I mean, how are you going to get in there and really look at the business and be in there? I mean, will the owners trust you enough to work with you to get you in there so you can see what you're buying?
Well, the thing is, when you're sending a letter to somebody, we don't want to talk to them about the fact that you have to worry about that because the employees may leave, because then we should put in there the fact that they want to provide owner financing because we may skip out. There's a lot of problems and a lot of things that the sellers think about, and although they're going to have to be addressed, what you have to realize is when we're sending a letter out, what we're only trying to do is let them know we are a buyer, we are not a business broker or a private equity firm, we have experience in your business, I mean, things like that. So all we're doing is we're trying to put that information down because all we're trying to do is bait the hook. We're trying to get to the point where the person that we're sending the mail to is going to be interested in calling me back and saying, let's set up an appointment and talk. Now, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to get financial information and stuff. I said, no, you don't want to get anything from them. They said, but I'm going to be wasting time. No, you're not, because in the beginning, if you're worried about the business making over $500,000 a year, tell them you're looking for businesses that have sales of a certain amount and make over a certain amount of money. Just put it in a letter. I mean, it's pretty simple. But I wouldn't go any further. I would not ask for further information. But I would just qualify in that area and just keep in mind, a lot of sellers don't listen to it. In other words, they're going to be making $300,000 a year, but they're not going to have the sales that you're thinking of. But what you have to do is you have to spend the time, you have to go talk to them, and you can't insult them, because what will happen is that business may get to the point where it makes sense in the next couple of years, and they're going to come back and call you. I get people calling me all the time from deals I worked on a couple of years before. We couldn't put it together. I never burned the bridge. Sometimes I've been tempted to, but I've not burned the bridges. And what happens is they come back. In fact, I'm working on right now. They came back from 4 or 5 years ago in South Carolina.
All right, that's interesting. So anyone out there hustling and they're meeting with business owners, the sales cycle could last up to 5 years. You've met them, you express an interest in buying their business, and that's not wasted because you never know when they call you back.
They call back quite often. I never kept track of what the percentage is, but they do call back quite often. Because the chance of selling to somebody else is a little remote and almost none, because not that many businesses sell in the marketplace. So when you're looking at that, you're just saying there's a 4-to-1, 5-to-1 chance, maybe a 10-to-1 chance that they're going to come back. Okay? I'm talking about 10-to-1 in my favor, not 1 to 10. But 10-to-1, you're going to say, well, that can't be possible. I said, well, I've been doing this a long time. I don't do anything magic. I mean, I'm a person just like all of you are, and I end up with the same deal that you end up with, because even though I have a lot more experience than you do, you probably have just as much experience meeting other people. But that's all it is when you're putting together a transaction and you're sitting down with a seller or your seller working with a buyer. It's just 2 people or 3 people getting together. They're going to like each other. Nothing wrong with that. And that will trust each other more than anything else.
Right. That's the end of our Part 5 Art Hamill Fellow Seminar. Please continue through Part 6. For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.